If you've been to Europe lately, you know your American dollar isn't buying you much these days. But in other parts of the world, it's not so bad because their currencies are even weaker than ours is right now. On today's Please Explain, we'll learn all about currency values, how they are set, how currency markets work, and how recent market trends might affect your wallet. My guests are Dr. Mark Duckenfield of the London School of Economics and Mike Santoli, Associate Editor at Barron's. I'm pleased to welcome them both to the Leonard Lopate Show here on WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard. And later on, we will be taking your calls about currency at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692, or you can post your questions online at WNYC.org. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Duckenfield, I'll start with you. What determines the value of currency?
Well, it depends upon what people want to pay between two different currencies, but fundamentally it'll depend upon differences in inflation and in growth rates and in interest rates between different currencies.
The United States stopped backing its currency with actual gold in 1971. Are there any currencies still backed by gold or silver?
No one is. The Swiss were technically backed by gold, but not in reality until just a few years ago. So no one and no currency is backed by anything tangible anymore. They're all paper currencies or electronic, for that matter.
So what backs up a dollar bill?
The full faith and credit of the United States government, whatever anyone thinks that's worth.
Wow. So if our currency is backed only by people's confidence in its value, what happens when people lose that confidence?
Well, just like they lose confidence in a stock, they start selling the currency based upon what they think the expectations of the future are. Now, the United States government and the United States has the productive capacity of the United States behind it as well. So there's a limit on how much it could probably lose in value. But still, with such major deficits in terms of trade and in terms of the budget, and with the ongoing housing crisis, a lot of investors are losing confidence in the United States currency.
When you talk about the United States has its productive value backing up its currency, what do you mean by that? We are no longer really a producer of goods. We're a producer of services.
That's correct. And we can sell those services abroad for what we're able to get people to pay for them. And we also can import things from abroad, which are typically manufacturers or oil. The United States, to try to redress the balance of payments problems that it has, would have to import less and export more. So more people in the United States would have to move into producing things that foreigners buy, and they'd also have to stop buying things from abroad.
What has triggered a loss of confidence in the past for certain countries that have seen their currency value plummet? And then you get these images of, you know, people, what was it, after Germany post-World War I, people using wheelbarrows filled with cash to go
well,
to market?
Exactly. And you have a similar situation like this in Zimbabwe, where they're just printing money to cover their debts. And you had this with Germany because they effectively printed money to pay for their debts in the First World War and then afterwards to pay for additional costs. And because it wasn't really backed by anything, the currencies, people lost confidence in them very rapidly. And then they expected the government to continue to print more money, and that just threw fuel on the fire, so to speak. At the moment, people look at the United States, and they see a country that's starting to head what looks to be into a recession. Interest rates now are coming down compared with other countries in the world. The budget deficit is large. The trade deficit remains large. And it just appears that it's not as good a bet as it once was.
But I just want to remain with this image for a minute because I often have trouble wrapping my brain around this. So what is it when a currency gets devalued that a dollar isn't worth a dollar anymore and that you would need, say, a suitcase full of cash to go buy a loaf of bread?
Well, that's really inflation rather than so much the exchange rate. A dollar's worth a dollar. It just a dollar now is not worth what a dollar was last year. It's worth 2-3% less than it was last year. The same with a pound or a euro. They're worth slightly less each year. But when you start getting into a situation like you had in Germany, you have hyperinflation and the currency itself is considered to be completely worthless. Now, that's not the case with the dollar. No one's really suggesting that it is. But compared with other currencies that aren't being sent out into the world in such great numbers as dollars are at the moment, say euros or pounds, those currencies are seen as relatively more attractive, and they're stronger in currency markets than, say, they were 5 or 6 years ago. In 2000, the euro was worth about, at one point, worth about 89 U.S. cents. Now it's the dollar that's worth about 70 euro cents.
Let's bring Mike Santoli into the conversation. He's the associate editor at Barron's. Mike, how is the state of the economy affecting the current value of our dollar?
Well, with the odds of a steep slowdown or perhaps even a recession having been raised by this extra little down leg in the housing market here, it really has changed the relative growth outlook for the U.S. versus the rest of the world. One of the interesting things about this current period, this current economic cycle, is that the U.S. is really growing more slowly than the rest of the world, which is really it's upside down from what the 80s and into this century. The situation there was when you had vast parts of the world, Europe and Japan, that were stagnating. The U.S. was the only growth engine. That's really not the case right now. So the relative growth picture of the entire world is working to the disadvantage of the dollar. That's one thing. And also, as economic expectations in the U.S. have cooled a bit, and as I say, the odds of recession perhaps have been lifted, the Federal Reserve here did cut interest rates more steeply than many were expecting this month by half a percentage point. And that actually just makes the potential interest earnings in a given currency lower. And you know, as the professor mentioned, essentially, if you can earn less by investing in securities of that currency, it is going to hurt the currency. That's why you've seen this latest down leg in the dollar versus the euro and the rest of the world's currencies.
I'm speaking with Mike Santoli, associate editor at Barron's, and Dr. Mark Duckenfield of the London School of Economics. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and this is Please Explain Currency. We will be taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Mike, remind me, what is the definition of a recession, and what is the definition of inflation?
Well, a recession is essentially negative economic growth for the 2 or 3 consecutive quarters. Actually, the definition sort of varies, but economists use something like that as a rule of thumb. Negative economic growth obviously means that the national economy is producing less for a certain somewhat prolonged stretch of time. The last recession we had, of course, was not too long, actually during the mid and later part of 2001. So we have not seen one, and it was actually a rather brief and mild one. Inflation is simply a general increase in prices in an economy, mostly looked at as consumer prices, what people are paying for goods and services.
Would changing interest rates have a major effect on the dollar's value?
Certainly, yes. I mean, it's certainly one of the things that drives the dollar's value. But in turn, the flight from a given currency says a lot more about what the world's investors think about the potential for earnings in that country and the attractiveness of investing in that country, and both investing in paper securities as well as investing in anything in building a factory here or anything like that.
Dr. Duckenfield, how are currency exchange rates set in the first place?
Well, historically, when everyone was on the gold standard, your currency could buy a certain amount of gold, and you could, you know, $35 to the ounce or £4.86 to the ounce, and you could take your paper currency and exchange it for gold, of which there was a fairly set amount in the world. But since about 1971, we haven't been doing that, and currency exchange dealers typically will value the currencies against each other on the marketplace like anything else. Now, a country could choose to try and set its currency in value to a stable rate with a major trading partner. Anyone who vacations in the Bahamas knows that the Bahamian dollar is equal to one U.S. dollar. And being the head of the Bahamian central bank is probably the easiest job in the world. You just follow the American interest rates up and down. You wait and see what the Fed does, and you keep your currency steady with that. But you can't care about whatever happens in the Bahamas. You have to follow what the U.S. Fed does.
What organization keeps track of all the currency values around the world? Is it the Fed?
Well, the Fed certainly will, but the markets keep track of them just as the New York Stock Exchange keeps track of stock prices. And different currency markets in London or Tokyo or New York will provide services for making exchange. So when you go abroad and make a purchase with your credit card company, millions of other people are doing that as well. So the credit card company will process all of those transactions on a given day.
How does an investor make money trading in currencies?
Well, you can think that you know something about the economy that someone else doesn't know. George Soros made a great deal of money in 1992 speculating against the British pound. The British had decided that they would link their currency to the Deutschmark, and George Soros thought, well, that's the British aren't going to be able to keep doing that. I'm going to convert as much currency as I can and wait for the British to stop trying to hold their currency steady with the Deutschmark. Of course, the British failed to hold the currency steady. They devalued, let the currency float, and George Soros could put his money back into pounds at the new lower exchange rate, and he notoriously made over £1 billion in just a few days.
We're taking your calls here on WNYC at 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. Anthony in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Anthony. Oh, he's not. Anthony, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi. You have a question for Dr. Mark Duckenfield or Mike Santoli?
I do. I'm restoring a home in Italy, and I didn't mind too much when the currency, the euro, was at $1.25, $1.30. But now, these days, it's hitting $1.40. Do you have any idea of the trend for next year, if it's going to go even higher, or start to the dollar will start to rise a bit?
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't be a professor if I could figure these things out in the future. But my guess is that the U.S. economy doesn't look to be getting any better. The trade deficit is likely to stay large, as is the budget deficit. And I would imagine that with those sort of general background characteristics that the dollar will continue to weaken.
Thank you, Anthony, for your call. I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Duckenfield and Mike Santoli about exchange rates and currencies for this week's Please Explain. If you have questions about the value of the dollar, call us at 212-433-9692. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. This is Please Explain, our weekly segment on the Leonard Lopate Show here on WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and we're talking about currency with Dr. Mark Duckenfield, professor at the London School of Economics, and Mike Santoli, associate editor at Barron's. Mike, China's currency has also been in the news recently. What's the story there?
Well, China actually restricts the movement in the value of its currency. It actually pegs its currency to the U.S. dollar. And there's been much criticism for quite a long time that China is effectively forcibly understating the value of its currency, essentially keeping it lower than its economic fundamentals would dictate, mainly to maintain an advantage in its huge and growing export industries. So essentially, they've made noises about loosening those restrictions a bit and in a very measured, incremental way, allowing the Chinese currency to appreciate against the dollar, which on the margin could make their exports slightly less attractive overseas. It's not yet been a dramatic move. Lots of U.S. politicians like to get up and yell about how this is essentially unfair trade practices. The U.S. Treasury Secretary is constantly making diplomatic missions to China and attempting to accelerate this loosening process. And while it's happened in a couple of steps recently, it's not anything that yet has been so dramatic to really change that balance of trade.
How does the country go about devaluing its currency?
Well, devaluing it is essentially allowing it to move the way the market would have it move. It's really what it does right now is it sort of decrees that the yuan is worth a certain number of yuan worth $1, and that's the rate at which it will try to maintain the currency through its securities buying and selling operations and the way it maintains its own treasury reserves. China has built up an enormous store of foreign currency reserves because it's such a large net exporter. And what it does with those reserves is of tremendous importance to interest rates in this country because they finance our debt through buying treasury securities, as well as what the value of the dollar in the world is.
We're going to take another call. Jesse from Jersey City, you're on WNYC.
Thanks. Hi. I was wondering about what happened in Argentina with the destabilization of their peso, and if you could maybe recapitulate that and explain, does it compromise the integrity of the currency to have it pegged to another currency, and is there an especially good currency that works well for, as you explained, with the U.S. dollar backing Chinese currency?
Jesse, thanks for your call. Dr. Duckenfield, do you want to take a crack at that?
Well, the Argentines had run what was called a currency board, where they had backed their currency with the dollar pretty much one-to-one. And the idea was the U.S. is a major trading partner. The U.S. has low inflation. Argentina doesn't. And so if the Argentines can have the credibility to pursue policies that anyone who showed up with their currency could get dollars as well, then they could import low U.S. inflation and get low prices. But ultimately, people didn't believe that the Argentine government, especially the subnational political entities, would be able to run the sort of balanced budgets required to continue this policy. Now, and so they ended up having to devalue their currency and let it float, as Mike talked about earlier. Now, what currency is a good one to try and peg your currency to? Well, it depends. Usually a major trading partner, because if you're trading with them quite substantially, your exporters are going to want to be able to be sure of what sort of price they can get. That might be a good reason for doing that. That's certainly the reason the Chinese have linked their currency to the U.S. dollar. Lots of other countries have linked in the past to the dollar as well. Panama and Ecuador currently do. A lot of East Asian economies also follow the dollar because they export to the U.S. and their prosperity depends upon successful exports.
You mentioned a currency board in Argentina. How does a currency union like the European Union's euro work as compared to a national currency like our dollar?
Well, the euro is like the dollar. It's a real currency managed by a real central bank that's in people's pockets and is good for transactions.
Opposed to a fake central bank?
Yes, as opposed to one that's that doesn't quite have the that sort of capacity. And the Europeans sort of had a fake central bank in the run-up to launching the euro. The euro existed for a few years before notes were in circulation. So there is that that aspect. But the Europeans, what was different and unique was that they had different national currencies that have now been completely extinguished and replaced by the euro. And part of the reason the euro was trading so low in the year 2000 against the dollar was the euro was new. No one knew if it would last, if it would fall apart, and you'd have to relaunch your national currencies. So the sort of confidence in the euro 7 years ago was pretty low. No one had ever done anything like the Europeans had done. But now, 7 years later, it's seen, despite potential, some problems of adjustment, as quite successful in its fundamentals.
We're going to take another call. Poosh from Princeton, New Jersey, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
I had a quick question about a conversation I recently had with a friend from India. And in our conversation, the currency exchange rate, particularly the exchange rate of rupee against the dollar, came up. And he said, as a matter of fact, with great pride, that Indian rupee had appreciated greatly in the recent few weeks against the dollar. And what I wanted to understand was, is that pride misplaced? Because my understanding is if the currency appreciates, it actually hurts export and other businesses that depend on, or rather growth that depends on export. So I just wanted to understand the relationship better.
Mike Santoli, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. Well, from a pure export point of view, perhaps it becomes a slight drag on the demand for Indian exports. But I would say that a rising currency generally reflects the world's faith in an economy. It's a judgment as to whether an economy is a good place to invest, a good place to attempt to earn a return, and in fact that the goods being produced by that economy are in high demand. So there is a certain prestige factor that does reflect the world's, you know, financial judgment about the stability of an economy and its growth potential. So on that level, certainly you would like to take some pride in a strong currency. I mean, in this country, it's quite interesting. It's taboo, essentially, to actually state that you would like to see your currency depreciate on the world market. And the joke is always that the U.S. Treasury Secretary always says he is in favor of a strong dollar, when in fact many times they pursue policies that are intended or at least recognized as going to result in a lower currency. So I do think there's a pride aspect to it. You don't want to create panic in the world markets by saying that you want to debase your own currency.
Mike, what is the value? What are the pros and cons of having a weak dollar?
Well, a weak dollar certainly would. Well, there's a couple of pros, if you could put them that way, that certainly it would make our exports that much more attractive and perhaps help our balance of trade, which of course is very lopsided in favor of imports, and that requires us, because of the realities of how we finance our purchases of imports, requires us to actually keep pulling capital in from the rest of the world, because we don't save enough here to buy all the things we buy from the rest of the world. Another positive, theoretically, is if dollars are worth less, then in fact it becomes easier for us to service our debt, because you're essentially repaying a set debt cost with dollars that are worth less and less, therefore they're more plentiful potentially. A lot of people suspect that the U.S. Central bankers and the Treasury authorities, et cetera, recognize this and perhaps think that a weaker dollar within some limits is not a bad thing, because we are essentially a debt-addicted economy right now.
So how does this affect individuals? I mean, if the central bank is making these policies based on larger economic engines like major corporations and producing goods and services, what does it mean for the individual to have a weak dollar?
One element of having a weak dollar that has definite impact on individuals is, at least on the margin, it will contribute to higher inflation, or at least will be one of those things that acts as an inflationary force. Again, if you just think about it, you can go back at the extreme example of the wheelbarrows full of Marx back in Germany. It essentially does mean that it makes it easier for people to raise prices if dollars are worth less. Your imports will cost more, therefore it can create upward cost pressures elsewhere. That's certainly one of the major risks to having a severely weakened dollar. But there's no real saying if that's going to be a decisive thing in driving inflation higher, simply because other forces, such as the rate of economic growth, are partially going to perhaps restrain pricing pressures if, in fact, the economy is going to weaken anymore.
We just have a few moments left. Quickly, Mike, the Canadian dollar is equal to the U.S. dollar right now, a situation we haven't seen in decades. Was that because Canada's value rose, or we sunk down to a Canadian we met the Canadians?
You always meet in the middle. I mean, it's essentially Canada's relative position in terms of its government finances are certainly in very good shape. And I would point out that the Canadian economy is a tremendous beneficiary of higher commodity prices around the world. They're a large producer of energy, timber, anything that you need that's very heavy if it falls on top of you. That's something that's definitely helped the Canadian dollar. So it really is just the relative government finance position, as well as a little bit of the trade advantages that Canada's enjoying.
Dr. Mark Duckenfield, in the near future, should we expect to see the dollar get weaker, stronger, or stay the same?
Well, my guess would be that it would continue to weaken because of the chronic U.S. Deficits, and it's quite a substantial amount
as Mike was saying, to service that. There was the recent Dubai ports deal that was nixed by the Congress, about $1 billion. But the U.S. has to run a deal like that every single day for an entire year to service the debt that it's accumulating.
And Mike, in the few seconds we have left, what do you think? You agree?
Well, I think the general trend is probably lower, but what happens is when everybody agrees on that on a trading basis, many times the dollar will rise in a sense because everybody has bet too aggressively that it's going to fall. I think we might be nearing one of those points now. That would just mean a kind of a temporary respite, though.
Mike Santoli is associate editor at Barron's. Dr. Mark Duckenfield, professor at the London School of Economics. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me in Please Explain Currency.